Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2025. This is episode 126 of DM Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and of course, joining me in the new year is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How are you doing, Ben? How was Christmas? How was New Year's? How was the break?
Oh, it's great. I am building up some random encounters and scenarios and stuff in my spare time. I got through the holidays and the new year and stuff mostly unscathed from work, which was good. And unfortunately, we've been so busy with life and stuff like that, we haven't been able to play as much as I'd want. But at least it's giving me time to kind of really up the next session compared to what I was originally, you know, had available. So I'm getting pretty excited about continuing my campaign as well as some other stuff coming in the future.
Yeah, that's exciting. And that's almost kind of the same for me, because usually I take a little bit of a holiday break from DMing. And we'll talk about it a little later. One of my players ran a little two-shot, which was super cool, that I can't wait to kind of tell you a little bit about. But that doesn't mean I haven't been busy. I've been planning for my next few sessions. We're going to be starting back up here in 2 weeks or so. And I am so pumped for what the next few sessions may have in store. So very excited. Always nice to have a little creative recharge, but it's good to be back. Good to be talking to you, podcasting about D&D again. We've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about tonight, including, of course, the new Monster Manual drip feed of information has started. That is coming out in February, so that's super exciting. And a little Christmas gift that we got completely out of the blue, the 2024 Artificer Unearthed Arcana just dropping out of absolutely nowhere. So that was super interesting. They had a big like 40, 50 some minute video on it, and then like 14, 16 pages of UA, the entire new proposals for the 2024 Artificer. So
yeah,
very, very exciting stuff.
I did not have that on my bingo card at all. Like, you know, I think the person manufacturing the 2024 bingo cards didn't even put it on there. They it was very unexpected. So very cool. I personally, yeah, I've never played an Artificer, but I know plenty of people who that seems to be kind of their favorite thing, their favorite go-to. So I'm glad that it's getting updated. And from what I've seen on it, it looks to be an exciting, upgrade, and hopefully you'll be able to stand with the rest of the updates.
Yeah, it's interesting. It fulfills a really good, really fun fantasy, just as an overall class. And I guess I kind of wish it was in the 2024 Player's Handbook,
yeah,
in a lot of ways, but I didn't expect to see it so soon. Like, this makes me feel like this is for like a Q3 or a Q4 book that's coming out this year.
Mm-hmm. It's like,
in some ways,
Tasha's Pantry of Everything is going to be coming with this or something.
Yeah. but yeah, let's dive in. Let's talk about the new UA a little bit. So, like I said, there was a big developer video that dropped talking all about the changes. And I think one of the most interesting ones that I think they talked about, their whole idea was, with this update, they're trying to make the Artificer feel more like the magical crafter, the tinkerer, you know, get that fantasy built in a little more, especially even just from level one. Magical tinkering now allows the Artificer to just literally craft low cost items quickly. Yeah, like, you know, just like the base toolkit, like, you know, oil, nets, paper, parchments, you know, a torch,
a bucket.
yeah, bedroll, and just magically craft those things. So, oh, I don't have to carry around a ton of crap anymore. Let me just make that, you know, real quick.
Exactly. And for me, like, the only thing that I can equate this to is just Full Metal Alchemist of just, oh, gosh, give me that rock over there. Cool. Now we have some rope. You know,
like I think that's like that. I really love that comparison because it does feel like there was a little bit of inspiration from like the alchemy of like transmutation mm-hmm. type stuff, the equivalent exchange and all that fun stuff, which Full Metal Alchemist, amazing show.
Brotherhood, even better.
Brotherhood, even better. But yeah, like so you can use the feature, you know, a number of times equal to your intelligent modifier. And you get all of them back on a long rest, and the item you make lasts for an hour. So it's great, kind of in a pinch. I need one of those things. So that was one of the cool things that stood out. The other one was they changed your infusion.
Yeah,
so there is no infusions anymore, which is kind of interesting. It's been redesigned and renamed to Replicate Magic Item, and the feature allows the artificer to replicate any magic item of a qualifying rarity and item type. So this is kind of interesting. I'm sure this will be in some ways like probably slightly controversial depending on how you felt about infusions and such. But they basically now have a list of magic items that you can create. Like Artificer level 2 plus, Artificer level 6 plus, Artificer level 10 plus, Artificer level 14 plus. That basically here's a list of the things you can create, you know, like a weapon plus one, goggles of night, sending stone, shield plus one. You can move into armor, boots, cloaks, level 6 plus, level 10 plus, uncommon ring or wondrous item that is cursed. You can make level 14 plus rare armor, ring, wand, weapon, or wondrous item that isn't cursed. And so they said they wanted to do this for two reasons. One, they wanted the artificer to feel more like that magical tinkering and kind of having the fantasy of actually creating the full item rather than just like infusing something, the crafter route, right? Mm-hmm. And then secondly, they said this is going to open them up a little more because then they can add magic items to this list. Like you're not stuck with these are your infusions, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now when they add new rare, common, uncommon, and rare magic items, those then become available for you to then craft, right? So I think this is I think it's a super interesting take. Balance wise, I don't know. Like you're certainly opening things up for more interesting balance of being able to create specific items, especially with the artificer being able to attune to more than three, right, down the line. So I do like that it's more flexible in a lot of ways. I think that's really cool. And it kind of fits the fantasy more. I don't know how the balance is going to work. I do like that it's kind of future-proofed a little bit. It's kind of how they, you know, split all the classes into the different categories so that hopefully they can say, you know, this type of class can get this if there's a new thing down the line and what.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
The thing I'd like about this most is that having had someone play an artificer and us rereading the infusion rules over and over again and like coming up with different things every single time that we read it, like rules wise, I'm really glad that this is, you know, kind of sticking with it. Hey, you just make and have this magical item. The thing that I think is just absolutely amazing is the fact that as soon as you get to level 6, you can just make an uncommon armor, wand, or weapon, which is awesome. But then as soon as you get to 10, you can just make an uncommon wondrous item. Just, you know, at that point you can make anything that's uncommon And I think that's amazing. It gives you a chance to really kind of, you know, customize and change your character and, you know, kind of have this whole toolkit idea and mentality that they were talking about in the video. Whereas, like with the whole, magical tinkering where you can, you know, make the mundane stuff so that you have it and it's there and available for you. It's like, if you turn into an artificer and you're like, okay, cool, great. We need some rope. Boom. Got some rope. Awesome. Oh, I need, I'm a human. I need some goggles of darkness or whatever they're called. Cause we're about to go in the other dark. Boom. I can just make those, you know, I'll have to give up something else that I have if I have something else made already, but I can just make those, you know. It's being able to adapt to situations, which I think really fits the MO of this kind of character type and class, because you're tinkering. It's what you do. Like, you know, with some of the subclasses, people are like, oh, you know, if you want to be Iron Man, it's like, this makes me think of Iron Man 3 when Tony Stark didn't have his suit and he went and just kind of put in or made a whole bunch of different random contraptions when he was going to, you know, infiltrate that compound and stuff. It's you're making what you need for the task at hand, and you're flexible and can change it later on if you need. And I think that's absolutely amazing and a ton of fun. And then on top of that too, once you hit to 14, you're able to make rare stuff, and that just like upgrades your abilities, upgrades your access to different things, like so much more. So it's a really neat change and I like it a lot. I mean, whenever they give you know, choice to do something in a game like this, you know, whether it's customer character customization, or, you know, just various things like that, more options is always better because you can really kind of fill in those gaps of, you know, how you view your character, how they play through things, and being able to jump and be like, hey, I'm the pocket knife of the group, let's do this, I think is just absolutely amazing and a great addition to all the other classes that they have. Because the closest thing that we have to something like this is the wizard, and they're doing everything magically, but this has that mix of like tactile, like stuff involved with it, as well as adding like a magical flair to it. And I think that's just an amazing way and a very cool, better take on the class.
Yeah, it should be pretty neat. It certainly opens up the flexibility massively. And obviously there are some limitations. There are known plans known, right? So you can know how to replicate up to a certain amount of items depending on your level. You can switch them out when you level up. So there is, you know, ways if something might be useful earlier on, not as useful later, you can swap that out at some point too. You can also interestingly enough, drain the magic item as a bonus action. You can touch a magic item within 5 feet of yourself that you created and cause the item to vanish and convert it, its magic into a spell slot.
Yep.
So yeah. That's pretty cool. So you can do level one or two spell slots depending on if it's a common or uncommon / rare item. So you can, if in a pinch, you can basically pull that back. And get some spell slots.
Yeah, which you get the spell casting right at level one as well. So you're going hand in hand with the whole spell casting and like tinkering thing, like as your
just right away
as your identity in this game, which is great.
Yeah, and they've also got the wizard type thing. Again, the intelligence, our intelligence casters, both of them can swap out one cantrip on a long rest as well, which was not doable before. But now both the intelligence casters can swap out a cantrip on a long rest, which is just another I really like that a lot. I like the flexibility in that, and it's cantrips, right?
Yeah.
So that's really cool. They changed Flash of Genius. Instead of giving bonus to the roll, basically when you are a creature you can see within 30 feet, fails an ability check or saving throw. So now you don't need to do it and, you know, cross your fingers and hope. You already know they failed. So when they fail, you can use a reaction to add a bonus to that roll, potentially causing it to succeed. And the bonus equals your intelligence modifier. So now, if someone fails a check, you can potentially, or at least maybe kind of close. No. Oh, that's looks like it's pretty close. Let me give him a plus four bump or a plus five bump. Cause that might help them succeed this mm-hmm. thing. Right. Or, oh, they failed. That's a 12. We're fighting an adult dragon, an extra four or five probably is not going to do anything. So I'm just going to save it for now. Right.
Yeah.
I like those types of things. Because in a lot of ways, I hate the wasting of resources without information.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly. It's at one the of very the reasons least why as a DM, I tell you what I roll.
Yeah, I do that in my games too, for a lot of stuff, or for at least for this particular thing. If they wanted to use it, I would probably let the person know if that would help them or not.
Yeah.
If they had their reaction left to use still. So, but yeah, no, that's so that was changed. Obviously, Epic Boon at 19, just like all the other classes, being able to attune more items at level 14. Basically, you get to attune 5 instead of 3. At level 18, you get to attune 6 rather than 3. So they, you can have tons of magic items going, and in likely at least a few of those might be ones you just made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially once you get the rare item creation going. So yeah, overall, I mean, it looks like some decent stuff. Again, I am not an artificer expert, so I don't want to just flat out say, yes, this is better.
Yeah.
Right. Here. I think the ideas are very interesting. And obviously there are going to be players who have played artificers regularly that will probably have far more in-depth commentary. And obviously there are creators and like YouTube people and stuff that do this for a living. And they'll probably have a lot more information on that type of thing. You know, what is it? Trant Monk or whatever. And there's a lot of different YouTube creators that will talk about these things more in depth, but I do like that they are shooting for better fantasy.
Yes.
I think that's really interesting. They also have, and of course we'll link this UA in the show notes at dndiscussions.com, but there's a few new spells. There's all the subclasses were updated as well. One of the coolest ones I thought was the armorer, which is getting a brand new armor type, and basically an Iron Man suit.
Yep.
Or Hulkbuster suit. So that's super cool. I really like that. And the artillerist, I think got a lot cooler because the Eldritch Cannon now is able to do all the different things instead of you having to create a specific one. Mm-hmm. And maybe screw yourself over because you didn't make the right one.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you need it to do something else. So again, it's just one of those things of giving more flexibility, not screwing you over near as hard for the choices that you make, which I wholeheartedly support, because it never feels good to pick the wrong thing or just have to default to, well, I'm just going to use the force ballista because shooting things at range just is kind of always good.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to default to that when no, like the protector or the flamethrower or whatever could be really cool, but maybe you don't get to use them as much because you didn't know the situation you were going to run into, or you needed the guaranteed, this is going to be helpful.
Exactly.
So I like that change a lot.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, it looks to be positive. And like I said, for me, at least, a lot easier to understand and run.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be fun. Again, there is going to be a survey for this. So if you are a big artificer player and you have a lot of thoughts on the fantasy, if they could go even further in certain cases, or obviously subclass feedback as well. We'll definitely shout out that link when it goes live. I don't, as of this recording, it is not live yet. But my guess is, since it's been out for a few weeks now, the survey for feedback for this will probably go live sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I would think so.
So anyways, check that out. To your heart's content, let us know what you think of the new Artificer UA. And hopefully this will mean that the 2024 Artificer will be here sooner rather than later. Maybe even sometime this year, which would be awesome.
I would definitely enjoy that because I want to get my hands on it. I want to actually try it out.
Yeah, I've played like a one shot with an Artificer before. It's a fun class. There's a lot you can do with it. It's a very cool like fantasy. It's a fun like half caster type thing. So any additions or improvements they can make to it, especially for the quality of life type stuff that we're seeing in this UA is definitely a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. So with that out of the way, the other thing that Wizards has been dropping is new monster manual stuff. And if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you'll know that me and Ben have a soft spot for encounters and running monsters and trying to make them fun, not just to fight against, but for us to run. I mean, we have a long running segment called Monster Fixer, which we created out of necessity because a lot of monsters especially in the OG monster manual are boring as heck.
Yeah,
to run.
That's a nice and to way play to put against. It.
Yeah. So I know one of the things that both of us were really hoping for in this new monster manual were that monsters would not only be scarier, because a lot of monsters do not punch at their CR weight. A lot of times, especially if you're like in the D&D Beyond encounter builder or stuff, basically all of my encounters are classified as deadly.
Yep.
They are not in any way. Like some of them are, but most of them that are classified as deadly are not deadly in any way, shape or form. And as we talked about before, the encounter building math that as it currently sits starts to break down around level 5. Pretty much, and just gets worse the higher you go from there. You really have to throw in extra stuff or homebrew or hit your higher level parties with a much higher CR level, because right now the CR level in theory basically is a CR of 1 should be able to challenge a party of 4 level 1s.
Which
CR of 10 should be able to challenge a party of 4 level 10s, more or less, right?
Yeah.
Does not work like that, especially as you get past level 5 and move into those higher levels. A party will trash a same CR monster, especially if they are by themselves.
Yeah, or
his action economy becomes a much bigger deal.
Or even more so, if you're actually like, you know, rewarding your players with like loot and magic items, then those CR levels just do not.
Yeah, it throws off all the calculations. Yeah, even more. And so they released a big video on this. We'll have all this stuff linked. One of the things that really stood out to me early on was them saying our CR scale was kind of broken. And it's just like, yes, no duh. But they said that the CR scale that is in the original monster manual was basically if you ran that monster a very specific way, the most efficiently you could do it every single turn. And then it would be equal to its CR.
Yeah, it was. But then you choose the deadliest option every single time.
Every single time, basically. But it turns out in real world play, that doesn't happen like very often at all. And it also turns out that's not super fun.
No.
Most of the time to run or play against and is very one note. So they said one of the biggest things they changed in this new monster manual is that the monsters should hit that CR regardless of how you use them. Which I thought was really interesting. And they said they touched absolutely every single monster. There's over 500 of them biggest monster manual they said they've ever released. And more than 85 of them are brand new.
Yes.
Like not even in the original monster manual. So this thing is absolutely massive. So I'm very excited to like they started like hints and teasers, but I'm very excited to dive into this to kind of see, like, obviously more or less across the board, there's more HP. So they're not going to be taken out in two or three rounds, especially at the higher levels. They've added a lot more to different families. I think, Ben, they mentioned vampires. There's going to be like some low level and some higher level ones. So they've filled out a bunch of these monster families so that you can encounter them kind of wherever you're at versus, oh, this is only low, or, oh, this is only high.
Yeah. And that's something that I absolutely love, because sometimes, you know, you'll go flip through the monster manual, which one of the things that they said is that's the first book that a lot of people choose. And when you flip through and kind of look at something, that's kind of what builds your imagination, what kind of creates your game or adventure or even campaign in some instances. And the fact that they're, you know, giving you something of every level, you know, in a lot of these families, or at least every level of play, to be able to give you that sort of experience to use it, makes me just super stoked for it. Because just the vampires alone, when I was running the small den of vampires in one of my cities, I had access to like a vampire and vampire spawns, and that's kind of about it. And my players were at a level where it really wasn't that much of a contest, unless I really did everything I could to do what that CR was supposed to say, which was, you know, try to do everything as deadly as possible or cheese the fight, you know. And it turned out to be, you know, really enjoyable overall, because I had to kind of make some changes on the fly, and that's when a divine intervention occurred and totally changed the battlefield beforehand. So, you know, lots of stuff going on there, but, you know, having access to that is great, but then even more so, having so much more legendary monsters at a higher level play is great. It doesn't just kind of shoehorn you into, okay, well, at this point you're basically going to be fighting ancient dragons and high level demons and, you know, maybe some celestials. No, they're adding a ton more different stuff so that you have access to, again, like the higher level vampire lords, just, you know, as an example. They added a whole bunch of different, like, you know, like minion-y kind of stuff that'll level up with you as well. So it's not just like, hey, there's a goblin and you know that they're a CR, you know, quarter and that's all they can ever do. You know, some of those have been leveled up for a higher level play. And then on top of that, too, they took so many more like legendary creatures, you know, for just overall cool and fun things just thrown in there. So they're giving you a huge, you know, plethora of options to, you know, have fun with, that you don't have to go in and alter all the stats on and change everything just to make it so that it'll fit with your level 12 characters or level 17 characters or whatever, you know. And I'm excited for that, especially since my game's going into, you know, like the higher echelon. They hit level 15, so now I'm really looking at, okay, what can I actually throw at them that could potentially be a challenge or kill them?
Yeah, we need a monster manual where a DM, especially who's running a higher level campaign, a level 10 plus campaign, where a DM can go, oh, I'm going to take this monster and use it and just run it as is. And it's fun. It's to fight against, to play as, and just works. Mm-hmm. Like we didn't have that. We really didn't have that before. In a lot of ways. And so I'm really hoping that this will just be much more, especially for higher levels, a plug and play, where I can just look through and go CR22. Cool. Pull that out, plug it in from my level, you know, 18 party or 17 party or whatever, and it'll just work. Right. So I think that's a huge thing that's been missing. I think they seem to really have a focus on higher level stuff in this, interestingly, and they talked about that a lot, which makes me really hope that in this next 10 years of fifth edition, or 5.5, which we're in now, that they will support officially high level play at a much greater level than they have been for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, because high level play is so fun. That's where you have all your coolest stuff, your coolest spells, your coolest abilities, the coolest monsters in some ways as well. There's so much that your liches and your dragons and your giants and all these things. So I really hope this is kind of a good omen of what's to come as they support stuff. Some of the other big things they've made is just in the formatting of the book. So it's alphabetical. Now you don't need to know if a creature is a devil or a demon or an ooze or an elemental or whatever. You just look up the name and it's all alphabetized. So that makes things easier. But there's apparently a lot of tables in the back of the book that does organize the monsters by CR, by environment, by type, by all these different things. Most monster listings now provide information about a creature's habitat and treasure to help you plan encounters. Like, that's super cool. For example, section on centaurs provides a list of environments where centaurs could typically be found and the potential treasures that could be acquired from them. There's also a new gear section that appears on the stat block of creatures who possess equipment suitable for use or retrieval. This allows dungeon masters to easily determine what items a defeated creature might leave behind in addition to the treasure mentioned above. So thanks to this addition, if your fighter wants to upgrade to like a plate armor, you can pit them against a monster that has this item listed in their gear section.
Yeah,
then they can potentially walk away with that piece of gear. That's super freaking helpful.
It's so great.
I really like that.
And on top of it, it makes it so that you're not using MMO loot rules where it's like, I fought a basilisk. Oh, you need a new shield. Here you go. You know, you'll be able to kind of identify certain things that you can throw at your players that'll give them some of the things that maybe they're looking for. And I think that's absolutely great. Plus, on top of that, too, loot and gear and stuff like that is always something that we want to have available, but we have to make sure that it's kind of makes sense when we're playing the world. Otherwise it gets a little weird and kind of, you know, well, unexplainable and silly to be
video gamey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
video gamey.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that marmot over there, I killed it and got this fishing pole. What's up with that? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want that.
No,
I don't want that.
One of the other things I'm actually looking forward to is the NPC stat block revamp.
Oh my God. I'm so excited for that because I use those all the time.
It's like, I just need a noble. Oh, if someone breathes on them, they're just going to die. That's just not too great sometimes. You don't really want that. But I mean, they've got, a whole bunch of different humanoid species, which, you know, the best part is that everything's like aligned with like the role or profession or anything. So you can have like a super charismatic drow or like, you know, some sort of Goliath knight, you know, things aren't going to be, you know, specific to a species or whatever. It's going to be the role that they're playing in, that it works kind of like how they've changed everything to like backgrounds as opposed to the actual like species that you're playing.
Yeah. So much more templated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And on top of that too, 40 of those NPC stat blocks, they're CR 1/8 all the way up to 12. So we actually have, again, a good variety of just NPCs that'll be around that you can just throw into things. So that's, to me, a huge upgrade, because if you go and look at the NPCs that they have in the current like monster manual or even DM's guide, or not the current, the 2014 one, all that stuff is just so low level and your characters out level that stuff so fast. Like, I don't know if there's anything higher than like what, maybe a 5 or something in there.
Yeah, they're all fairly low, other than like, here's the archmage or, you know, whatever. But
yeah,
it's they're, for the most part, they're all pretty low end. So I love like templated NPCs. This is why I've suggested so many times, like the adaptable NPCs variety of supplements. Like that you can get on the DM's Guild, right? I use those all the time because just like, I need like a good soldier template. I need a good cleric template. I like, without making a bunch of other stuff while still having some cool, unique things that they can do. So being able to pull that template in and throw it onto my an NPC is really, really good. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad that they put in so much extra work into that section, because I feel like that's a section I'm going to be turning to a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And then, of course, just variations on iconic monsters is, you know, something that's kind of new. They're taking monsters that, you know, and like putting them in different environments that will actually, you know, kind of change things, you know, putting them in like different ancient and magical wildernesses. Like the example they use is, you know, what if an owlbear lived in a place like that? Well, here you go. This is what we have. Like, they have the primeval owlbear, and it's going to have distinctive abilities from its counterparts and stuff. And the fact that they're kind of varying that kind of stuff too is really neat, so that when you're looking at it, it's like not every single I'm just going to go back to Basilisk. I don't know if they have different Basilisks in here. I'm just assuming so. But, you know, not every single Basilisk is going to live in the same exact environment. They're going to be here, there. They might have different abilities based on where they live. I mean, if you look at the dragons and how varied they are based on their colors and everything, why wouldn't more just creatures have that sort of thing going on? You know, if you look at our world, yeah, how many rodents are there that have, you know, specialized things that they do and characteristics that are different, that are located all over the world? So I like that they're incorporating that kind of sense of realism.
Adaptations.
Into these. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I really do like that. And I'm sure that contributes to the massive 500 number yes, that is in here. So yeah, it's a very exciting thing to have. And I'm really hoping, and this is just me personally, I'm really hoping we get some more fleshed out Celestials, because I think that was one of the weakest parts of, and has been for the longest time, just Celestials in general, right? Mm-hmm. Having a very, very small selection. Hopefully they fleshed that one out too, because they're very handy to have for sure.
Yeah. Plus their CRs do not waver very much. They're basically set in, hey, it's right here. This is your fire elemental. There's no variation whatsoever. Have fun with that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They also did say that there is going to be a revamped how to use a monster chapter,
yeah,
which breaks down stat blocks with clear explanations, ensuring DMs of all skill levels get the most out of running, and practical advice for ensuring your monsters perform up to their challenge ratings. That's good. Keith Armin also, I know, does... having a brain fart. It's a book series called, yeah, The Monsters Know What They're Doing.
Yep. I have that actually in my D&D dresser over there. It's a great book, and it goes through and it lists, you know, kind of like thought processes, things that the monster would be going through, things that they would do, kind of their behaviors and stuff. And it is a very useful tool, because you can look at a stat block as much as you want, and, you know, you can infer some stuff from there. But for someone who's been around and like knows the lore of a lot of these creatures or things like that, you can get a lot of, you know, like really good decision making from them. And, you know, this is more than just, you know, oh, I'm a velociraptor, grr, I'm going to attack you. No, this is like a red dragon is, you know, and it talks about the kind of personality that they would have and different sorts of, you know, plans and scheming and things that they would do. And I absolutely love it. It's helped me a whole lot, especially when I was like playing with a vampire, talking about how, yeah, you know, a vampire is not going to stay and fight. They will escape at any point, because their whole point is, you know, hey, I'm immortal. I need to live to fight another day. And they can escape, come back years later, much more prepared, and just wipe someone out, you know, Give them that sort of feature and that idea. The dragon talk is absolutely amazing on that, as well as a bunch of other things. So having this in the DM's guide is such a boon, and it helps a lot more and, you know, adds to that DM toolkit that the Dungeon Master Guide already has. But this is giving you those insights into the monsters themselves, which I think is a huge addition.
Having more of that inside the monster manual as it is, helping you figure out how to play the specific types of monsters is a really, really good thing. And one of the things they did mention along with this is that there's all new art. There's all new art. There's a lot more art. And they said they've really shifted away from just here's what the thing looks like to much more story-based art, like being able to see an example of the monster in its element, in its terrain, maybe using a tactic that it uses, kind of like art to inspire, basically, instead of art to just show. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited to get it, if for nothing else, just to see all the new art, because that's super cool. But as Ben was saying, Keith Amon has amazing books, and I would venture to say they will still be fantastic supplements to even the new monster manual. He's got The Monsters Know What They're Doing, More, The Monsters Know What They're Doing, Live to Tell the Tale, Combat Tactics for Player Characters, and then How to Defend Your Lair. So there's four of these books. If you end up wanting to look them up, they're also very good. And speaking of new art and adaptations and everything, the last piece of this that they started diving into were specifically the new dragons. All 10 main dragons, all five, you know, chromatics and metallics, are getting brand new art, brand new stat blocks. The art is super interesting, actually, because the dragons have this is like the first redesign for a little while. And all the dragons have taken on much more unique silhouettes, much more like interesting, like variations as to this. They don't all just look like the same thing with a different head and tail. Yeah, essentially, like some of the previous incarnations, which is really cool. I think I know some people may like it, some may not, but I think it does, if nothing else, give them a ton of personality as to and a ton of recognizability, much more so than the old art looking stuff does, because they're very distinctive.
Yes.
Black dragon, much more skull-like face.
Yeah, the forward-facing horns.
Yeah, much more sinewy. Green dragon, much more snake-like, with this really long neck. Just all these sorts of things. The red dragon, just like more of it. Like this apex predator type thing. And so I really do like the redesigns a lot. It sounds like they put a ton of work into the dragon specifically. Who knows? Maybe they listened to the monster fixtures, because boy, those dragons needed help bad.
And I mean, already the adult and ancients, they can cast magic, which is something that we have definitely been a huge proponent of.
Yeah. And that was an optional rule before, and it shouldn't have been. It should have just been built in, but now it is. They have built in full-on spell casting and at-will type uses of spells into all of the adults and all the ancients, which is super cool.
The what is it? The white dragon is like barely there, just because it is such a ferocious, more like primal sort of, you know, personality.
Yeah. Type dragon. But to make up for that, they all have new legendary actions and such they can do.
And more legendary actions per turn.
Yeah, and more
per round.
And in this case too, they simplified layers a little bit as well, so that dragons actually become, their stat blocks become slightly more powerful in their layers. They can use more legendary actions. They have more legendary resistances if they're in their layers. So now that adds a, pun intended, layer to fighting a dragon. And not wanting to fight it in its lair but trying to draw it out to weaken it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing is, so with the art, they're giving you like kind of an idea of, you know, what that the dragon is all about. One of the ones they talked about quite a bit was the green dragon, how, you know, it, the artwork really shows that it's, you know, again, kind of more snake-like, like Ryan was saying, but it's also like stalking its prey. It's hiding in plain sight. It's, you know, blending into its background. And the golden dragon is, you know, just this ferocious, beautiful, gorgeous thing. And I love the fact that the artwork plays into all that. But one of the things that they touched on, which I think is very important, is the fact that, you know, we've always had chromatic dragons, which were, you know, that's kind of the big thing. You're fighting it all the time. And yeah, here are all these metallic dragons that are just kind of sitting there and stuff. And if you're playing a good player, why would you fight a metallic dragon? Well, now they've added story hooks and, you know, beats and everything to the metallic dragons as well, to give you options to actually have them be used in a fight. I think the example is that a golden dragon was, the artwork is showing them like guarding and maybe an ancient temple or something like that. So your players may come across it and they might have to fight a metallic dragon based on, you know, some of these ideas that they have. They also described like silver dragons as, you know, kind of, you know, more the valiant, the knight-like. Sounds like Nightlight. Sorry, screwed my own head here.
Knight-like.
Yes, like a knight, you know, going out on a quest doing something. And the thing is they're, you know, they have like a genuinely good mentality. You know, they're lawful good and everything like that. But their goals may be different from yours. So again, you might have to fight them based on, you know, what's going on and, you know, whatever you kind of like trickle in there for the flavor of the dragon itself when you run it.
Yeah, I love that they talked about that and we're going to try and give you story hooks so that you have a reason to use these metallic dragons. I think one of the other really cool things that they talked about is how the regional effects for dragons will have mechanical implications now.
Yes.
Versus some of the other ones. They said, similarly, the region containing the dragon's lair has been giving more mechanical effects than previous iterations, making traversing the land surrounding their lair easier for DMs to run and more immersive. For example, drinking water within a mile of a black dragon's lair will now cause poison for an hour, or likewise finishing a long rest within the chilly fog surrounding a white dragon's lair can now reduce a creature's speed by 10 feet for an hour. Just different mechanical things that give more weight to these incredibly like powerful magical beings, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because previously those things are just kind of like, ooh, you feel like you're being watched in this area. It's like it doesn't really do anything mechanically to the game, whereas with these, you actually feel what's going on in the environment. And it's something that I actually really enjoy, as opposed to just within 5 miles of a dragon's lair, things are like hotter by 5 degrees. You know, it's like, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just even from a mechanical standpoint too, they've made these dragons deadlier, more fun. Obviously we talked about the adults and the ancients getting spell casting in most cases, but now each dragon, their basic attack is a rend. It's called a rend attack. It's the mm-hmm. default melee one. And it starts flavoring things as well, because as they get older, the attacks might get actually infused with an element. So your standard rend attack might do extra fire damage or extra cold damage or extra, you know, lightning damage, etc. And the multi-attack now, it's you can actually use the spell casting with it. So you don't just have to be like, the dragon uses a spell, end of turn. No, you can actually replace one of the attacks with the spell casting, or one of the rend attacks with another feature that the dragon might have, so that you can actually get a lot of stuff done. Because again, especially in higher levels, action economy is such a big deal. So if you're fighting these things solo, you need... So all those different attacks, you need those legendary actions to give your players a good run for their money.
Yeah. And a big thing that they were pointing out as well is that these are so redesigned mechanically that, you know, anybody who's been playing D&D for a very long time will be surprised by what's going on with these fights. And that alone, I think, is pretty great, because especially with us, you know, knowing, okay, we have claw bite. Okay, their legendary action is going to be their tail. They might have a wing buffet or buffet. You know, when the dragons put out a wing buffet for you, you know that they're actually bad. They're going to be poisoning that. You got to watch out.
It might be good. This might be the copper dragon be like, here's a buffet of wings, guys. They're boneless.
Yes. Here's some vegan ones. I made them from cauliflower over here. And if you don't like spicy, I've got a nice honey barbecue. Now I need to have a copper dragon setting out a wing buffet.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But I mean, again, being surprised by, you know, a dragon encounter, I think is pretty cool. Just all of a sudden it's like, hey, I'm just going to stay at range. I don't have to worry about any sort of melee weapon. He's used his breath attack. He hasn't recharged. I'm safe. And then the example they use is all of a sudden the world blows up around you. It's like, oh, that dragon cast fireball. Holy crap. Okay. So yeah.
Oh stuff. No. Or they talked about the gold dragon. It's got banish.
Yeah. It could just be like banish. Don't like you. Bye.
Yeah. Oh, you're the healer. Goodbye.
Not for now. Goodbye.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, it's a lot of really cool stuff. I'm very excited to get my hands on a lot of this really cool new stuff. It's like 384 pages.
Yeah.
Over 500 monsters. Like this is a really big one. And this is the one I think a lot of people have been very excited for and waiting for. Cause you know, obviously it's one of those things where especially if you've started a 2024 game or converted over to a 2024 game, it was an increase in player power, but the monsters stayed the same. So it threw off the balance even more. So it'll be really good to have this kind of baseline everything again. So hopefully DMs won't have to do a lot of extra work to get things running in the way they should, or at least are intended to run, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So as of right now, the release date for the Monster Manual, new Monster Manual, is February 18th. Master tier subscribers to D&D Beyond, if you have a digital version, get that 2 weeks early, and the Hero tier subscribers get that 1 week early. So basically, beginning of February for your Master tier subscribers is when the digital version is going to start hitting your account. So I'm very excited here in a few weeks to dive into that. And I'm sure we will have a lot more to talk about when that does come out.
Yeah. And if they keep peppering in information like before, we will, of course, wait a bit and have a few videos to discuss with our next episode, which, you know, any information that they give in all these previews, it's always gotten me like super excited and stoked for the new books. And, you know, so far from what I've seen from the Monster Manual, I'm in the same exact boat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of new things that are coming / have just come out, we have another new third-party supplement that just recently dropped on D&D Beyond just a few weeks back. If you are aware of the Griffin Saddlebag, this is an excellent third-party creator. Very specialized in magic items. There's a lot of really, really cool magic items that they made, but their book, Griffin's Saddlebag, book two, interestingly, book two, not book one, at least not yet, but book two of the Griffin's Saddlebag is now on D&D Beyond for you to be able to get and add 12 different subclasses, 2 new species, 504 magic items, 93 new monsters, and 7 maps. So
that's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff. So especially if you are a big fan of this creator, or you're looking for the Griffin Saddlebag, they specialize in magic items. So if you're looking for lots of really cool new magic items, this is a great supplement.
Yeah, I need to get it. There's, just looking at it, it's like, I need to get it. The magic items alone, I'm a sucker for magic items. Yeah, some
cool stuff. Real cool stuff in there. I know it was a Kickstarter, I believe, a little while ago. And they did, you know, the physical books and stuff. And so this is just another thing that's slowly making its way to D&D Beyond. So I'm hoping we get tons more really good third-party content throughout 2025 on D&D Beyond. Hopefully they start ramping that up. I know me and you have talked about this a lot. I'm really hoping we see a really big D&D Beyond itself update.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that needs to be updated, a lot of stuff that needs to be done to just continue to update the character sheets, to make things more user-friendly, to make all the different supplements fully work, right? And obviously, there's still a ton of third-party subclasses that don't necessarily work with 2024 yet that needs to happen. I really need my Echo Knight to be 2024 compatible so I can use weapon mastery and all that fun stuff for my campaign that I'm playing in. So please get that done.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that after the Monster Manual is out, like with everything finally being available and out there, that we have all that stuff. One thing that we didn't talk about on the Monster Manual, which I'm actually curious about, is, you know, they talk of goblins and, you know, kobolds and stuff, which, by the way, kobolds are dragons now, which is cool. But how is that going to affect our playable species? Are we going to have to kind of homebrew a version of it based off of the new Monster Manual? Or do you think that they're going to add new stat blocks in there?
Maybe they'll add new stat blocks. Because I assume they'll probably start re-releasing species as well as the new books come out, right? Because they only covered a handful in the Player's Handbook. They did add some extra ones that weren't there before, but yeah, they only covered a handful. So I would expect, like with the Artificer, that we will start seeing updates to these legacy species as new books come out.
Yeah. Hope so soon. But in the meantime, you know what? I'll just make some sort of weird bastardized version through homebrewing, because that's what you do as a DM to make your players happy.
That's right. All right. Well, whew, lots of new info that was dropped over the last few weeks. It's good to be back. Very good to be back. We're excited. There's going to be a lot of really cool stuff this year as new books drop, new supplements on D&D Beyond, as our campaigns progress. Hopefully we'll have some really cool guests coming on this year. We may even dedicate a few episodes to other systems as well, which is super cool. One of my New Year's resolutions for tabletop RPGs is to learn more. And thankfully I have a very cool friendly local game store that does do that quite a bit. So I'm gonna get back into Vampire hopefully this year, which is one of my absolute favorite systems. Going to play in some more Call of Cthulhu, learn Morkborg, which should be a lot of fun. Hopefully here in the next few months. And there's just tons of really good smaller systems. So that's definitely something that as we discover them and as we learn them, we will cover. So because their D&D is amazing, we love it. But there is also a lot of other really good stuff out there. And the more variety, the better.
Yep, exactly. Because having a variety means that people are innovative, creative, and it just helps everybody else grow.
That's right. But of course, before we go, Ben, we usually talk a little bit about what we've been doing in our campaigns or our D&D games in general. Have you got anything to talk about that you've done over the last several weeks while we've been on break?
Yeah, so we did play one final game in my campaign before we had to go on our hiatus for the season or whatever. And at least I'm pretty sure I haven't talked about it yet, but we finished that big fight in the cave and everything, and then they finally got to Aralond, which is the country that they've been journeying towards for a very long time now. I mean, that's what happens when, you know, it's a week at sea and there's encounters every day and stuff, and then they get to a city and then they find out there's a big conspiracy happening and stuff. So, you know, they've been busy. But when they got there, they found out, you know, more information about this, you know, quote unquote mob family that they're kind of, you know, investigating and going after, as well as the fantasy drugs that they stumbled across, as well as the diamond chunks that look like, you know, pieces of people and everything. And it turns out that a lot of the stuff that, you know, they thought they were going into is, of course, all connected amazingly, because that's how things happen in D&D. But it turns out that the Paladin's older brother, who, you know, kind of caused this whole thing of, you know, their family being, you know, disgraced and all this other stuff, it turns out it was just by pure coincidence. He stumbled across this whole operation of something, didn't know what he came across, but they found out that he was there. So they started this whole campaign to discredit them before, you know, the word got out, and to get them out of the country and to be hated and all this stuff, when he didn't even know what he came across, which is just bonkers crazy. And the fact that this is a very rich and powerful elven family, you know, who probably, you know, owns some of the politicians and stuff in a country that has just recently opened up its borders to outsiders, where not everybody agreed on that. And there's this, you know, upcoming ball that they're going to be hosting. It's a monthly celebration. And so next session, they're going to be going to a ball with a whole bunch of different nobles and stuff at a mob family's mansion that's,
oh boy,
potentially doesn't or is going to have some people there who do not like outsiders. And on top of that, they know that this is where the Paladin's brother, you know, left from, because he potentially stumbled upon something. So who knows what's going to happen when they're there? I'm excited. And this is why I'm actually a little bit happy that I got some extra time, because now I can actually put some time and effort. Well, obviously effort into everything, but put some time into giving more information for the nobles and the guests who are going to be there, as well as more time and information into the family that's going to be hosting this and all that. So it's going to be pretty great. I mean, they're in a new city. They want to explore for a little bit as well. Plus they need to get, you know, some nice fancy elven approved clothing for this really fancy kind of get together and stuff.
Because elven clothing is very fancy.
Oh, of course. And the fact that I've got a Goliath and then essentially a hermit, as well as, you know, two half elves who grew up there, who, you know, are having fun, as well as a fawn. So it's just kind of all like, hey, these people are really going to be standing out walking into this place. So, I mean, who knows what sort of reception they're going to have when they're there. It's all exciting. I'm stoked for this and to kind of go with the story, especially since all this came out of just kind of like a sideways thing to, you know, get back into the game and have something kind of fun happen. And that's where some of the best stuff comes from in D&D, where it's like, I wasn't planning for any of this, but I've crafted good reasons for a lot of stuff of this, for this to happen and stuff. So I'm excited to get to play it and see my players' reactions and, you know, kind of keep the story moving. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I'm excited to hear here in a few weeks when you get to run that.
How, oh, it, yeah, It'll be great. And then on top of that, too, we were able to play a holiday themed one shot at our local game store. It was the Lich Who Stole Christmas. So we were all, you know, kind of came to the small town, and the narration from this, you know, one shot module that our DM was reading, she presented it incredibly well. It was a lot of fun. She did it in rhyme, is very Seussian. So I'm like, okay, one of the things is Nevermore asked, like, hey, is there anything we need to know before this? She's like, yeah, it's going to be, you know, kind of like think Whoville and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to lean into this. So I made TikTok McClock. He is a clockwork sorcerer gnome, and he builds little toys and trinkets for kids and stuff and everything. And as soon as she rhymed the first thing, I decided that from that point on, my character would speak in rhyme for the rest of the session. So I did for 4 hours speak in rhyme the entire time. It was fun.
Wow. That is committing to the bit.
It was a little challenging at times, but I had a lot of fun with it. And most of the table did as well. We had a kind of curmudgeon-y person from the very beginning who was like, my character doesn't speak when we were introducing ourselves. We're just kind of like, okay. So we'll see how that goes. This is supposed to be like a, hey, did you read the description of the game that you signed up to play? Because
fun holiday game.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there's always going to be an edgelord somewhere. So. But anyways, we had a lot of fun with that, ended up defeating the Lich and, you know, saved Christmas, down in not Whoville. I forget what the name of the town was, but you know, saved Christmas. It was great.
That's super fun.
Yeah.
I'm really glad, you were able to do that. And like I said, friendly local game stores, look them up, see if you can find one in your area.
Yeah.
They have a lot of times they will have just fun stuff like that, that you can just sign up for or jump in on, and it's just a, hopefully you don't have like terrible people, but normally it is a very cool, very fun experience.
Yes, exactly, especially if you get a really good DM, and our DM, she was great. This is the second That's awesome. Time we've had her as our DM. The other time was when we did the pirate game. So overall,
very cool,
a lot of fun. Very cool. Yeah, what about you? Were you able to get some game time in since our last episode?
I was. So usually around, you know, December and whatnot, I'll take a few weeks off to just creatively recharge and just kind of take a little break. So one of my players ended up running a little two shot for us over the last few weeks that he wrote himself, that who knows, maybe he'll publish at some point. But it was incredibly cool. It was a 1940s. Little two shot thing. I don't want to spoil anything too much, just in case he actually ends up publishing it. But it's basically alternate history D&D, essentially. So all the fantasy races are there. You know, World War II is going on, fighting. You know, just the. Basically the fantasy equivalent of all the real life things. You are a bunch of PIs from Chicago going to investigate a mystery in this small town in Illinois. And so it was very, very cool, very fun. Like I said, a lot of it actually fully based on a real history and a real event that happened in that small town. In this time period.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was super cool to have it based on that. It was a lot of fun. I played a fairy clockwork sorcerer named Harlow Dowerfan and former mobster
turned cool. PI.
So that was a lot of fun. So our whole group had a lot of fun with it, rolling up characters and lots of just fun little references to, you know, the 40s and it was a great time. He did a great job writing it and running it. Had a lot of fun. It was great time to do it, just during, you know, my little downtime break to creatively recharge. And it went well. I'm very excited to jump back into my campaign here in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. I've got so much more stuff fleshed out and planned than I would have if I didn't have this break. So I'm incredibly excited for my players to be able to get back into that and to run the next few sessions. But yeah, the two shot was super fun. So if it ever comes out, we will let everybody know on the show.
I will be very interested in taking a look at that.
For sure. All right. Well, with that, Ben, that is a wrap on our first episode of 2025. As always, thank you, everybody, for listening. We hope you had a wonderful holiday time. We're excited to get back into the swing of things and have a great year of tabletop RPG content. But for now, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
You bet. If you're looking to find us online, you can find pretty much everything at dndiscussions.com. That's going to be every single episode we have ever done, as well as our social media information, which if you want to talk to us, the best way to do it is, believe it or not, through social media. Who'd have thought? You can always join our Discord server. We're going to have a link on dndiscussions.com. We also have our Blue Sky account links. So you can find DN Discussions, the show, on Blue Sky at DN Discussions. You can find Ryan. He is at TBK Zord. If you want to look at for me, I'm at Ben Bumhofer. But if for some reason you're like, hey, I don't really want to post anything, you know, publicly, either on Discord or on Blue Sky, you can always email us. That email address is going to be dndiscussions@gmail.com. We've got a whole DN Discussions theme thing going here. So basically, if you're looking for us, just type that in. You're going to be able to find us somehow, at least. Aside from that, hey, guess what? We like, you know, knowing that you like our show. If that happens, leave us a review wherever you listen, whether that's going to be on Apple Music or iTunes or whatever it's called, Apple Podcasts, who knows? They change the name every year. There's also, you know, Google Podcasts, which maybe you're shutting down. I don't know, but we're also on Spotify and other places. But basically, wherever you're listening to this, leave us a review. We love to hear those. We'd love to see those. On top of that, again, join our Discord. We have a lot of fun there. And if you're listening to this and you're like, man, I really wish that I could, you know, listen to an actual play about some of these people who play Dungeons and Dragons. I'm like, well, guess what? Plus Five to Hit is where you're going to find that. I am actually a player on Plus Five to Hits, and we have pretty much finished up Rime of the Frostmaiden. I know I've been saying we're on the final chapter for the last 2 years, but we are actually going to be recording our epilogue episode in the next couple weeks here. So yeah, the Rime of the Frostmaiden has come to a conclusion, which is pretty great. We are not 100% sure what's going to be happening yet after that, whether we're going to continue on with those characters, start a new campaign. We're discussing that, but in the interim, I am going to be running an adventure-ish type of thing myself. So if you want to hear me DM, well, you know what? I can, I guess, finally put my money where my mouth is on this, and you can hear how horrible I am.
It's not true. He's very good.
Until you hear an encounter, and then you're like, oh, no, he wasn't lying. He is really bad at encounter balance. So, yeah, you'll hear that. But once I start actually DMing, you know, those few episodes, I will let you know so that you know. In the meantime, hey, check out our Rime of the Frostmaiden campaign. There's a lot of fun stuff in there. But that being said, again, dndiscussions.com for everything you can possibly need. And you know what, everybody, thanks for joining us on this episode. Ryan, it is always a pleasure talking to you. I've missed you in this podcasting space for the last month or so. So I'm glad that we're back at it. And everybody else, until next time, make sure you roll high, and more so than ever, be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.